This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Wednesday evening, a ribbon-cutting ceremony formally opened the Alexandria, Virginia headquarters of the Senate Federal Credit Union. The building is named for the legendary Senate staff member, Bertie Bowman. He came to Washington in 1944, a runaway at the age of 13. At 90, he's still working as staff assistant to the Foreign Relations Committee. Just before the ceremonies, I spoke with Mr. Bowman.
We know you have a long career as a Senate staffer. Give us a rundown of the jobs you've done since, well, how many years ago was it?
It took me 2 years to do all of that.
Well, give us the highlights.
The highlight is that I've hearing coordinator for the Senate Foreign Relations Committee for many years, and the hearing coordinator also for the Credit Union Committee, Emeritus, and all that.
And what does a hearing coordinator do?
Hearing coordinator makes sure that everybody has work, and they meet and greet the people who are coming in to discuss things with the chairman of the committee or any staff member they may have an appointment with.
But you've done a lot of other jobs prior to that. What are some of the ones that stand out in your mind?
All of my jobs stand out in my mind. Because if it wasn't for all of the jobs I've had, I probably wouldn't be here talking to you today. But there are one that I would say, the one that I'm really grateful of, is that what the credit union have done for me and how it has helped me to grow into other jobs in the Senate.
And I've seen footage of you. You set up the microphones. You make sure the witnesses get escorted. So you've had the elbow of some luminaries and some rogues, haven't you?
Yes. There are several people that I deal with before our hearing starts. I deal directly with the chairman of the committee. And I've had fun doing that.
And when you're setting up a hearing, it's all set up. The witnesses are coming in. You're kind of hanging there in the background to escort them in and out, making sure the microphones, the volumes, and all that kind of stuff. I should get you as a producer in my studio one of these days. But do you listen to what's going on?
I'm too busy working, trying to get the work done. I have others who help me with the operation of setting up the Committee on Foreign Relations for the taping, with the hearings and the other senators of the committee.
And how has the pandemic made all of this different? I won't say more difficult, because somehow I don't think more difficult applies to you.
I don't know. I have not been to work for a while. Just kind of been under the weather for the last year almost. But it has been fun.
And I understand that at 88, you're not ready to actually retire.
Not really. Never ready to retire. You never give up something that you enjoy doing, you know.
Now, you came to Washington as a young man, worked for the Senate, and what's happened on your personal life in the meantime? Have you married? Do you have kids, family? We don't see too much about that.
Well, there are family. There is a family, two or three kids. There's been a wife. My wife had passed. Almost, I guess you can say I'm a widow now, you know. Been married twice, and my wife who kept the stick and kept me going.
All right. Well, I would say to the people that might be listening that can't see Mr. Bowman at the moment that this is a bright-eyed, sharp-looking guy.
I feel good. All the time that I've spent working on the Hill, meeting people, and I think the folks that I met and tried to help do certain things have kept me alive and ready to roll every day.
And all these years, of course, you've seen generations of young staff come, maybe stay, some come and go. A lot of them are sharp. You know, they have a Yale degree or they have a Harvard degree, and they're going to change the world and reinvent the Senate. What's that been like? And have you had a chance to maybe counsel some of them on how to conduct themselves?
I've counseled many of them, and they do have these ideas of how they want to work, or how they want to work for the senator, or the senator that they are working for on Foreign Relations Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to do a pretty good job. They listen. I've learned a lot from them.
And the senators themselves, you know, lately we've seen a lot of this incivility and so forth that you see on television. What's it like behind the scenes? Do they actually throw spitballs at each other, or do they? It used to be they were collegial.
Spitballs are thrown. I do the throwing. That's all that problem.
Yeah, but they used to have cigars together, and they would have a bourbon together in a hidden room or something. Does that still happen you don't have to mention the bourbon, but I mean, are they? Is there any kind of fellowship behind the scenes that the public doesn't see?
There's always a fellowship, and most of these, the fellowship that come my way are the ones that are. I try to make sure that the senators they have all the material that they need to do the hearing, whatever the hearing may be, or the subject of the hearing, whatever it may be, and we go from there.
And do you spend most of your time in the Senate office buildings, or do you get some time in the Capitol?
I go from place to place. We have an office in the Capitol, Senate Foreign Relations Committee office in the Capitol, and there are steps I do take to get that work done.
Maybe you take the subway a little more often these days,
yes.
From building to building?
Yeah, I don't do that walking like I used to. I used to walk over, run over, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Senator Thurman was the one that we always tried to get. He always tried to get me to run with him. He used to run from building to building, you know.
Sure.
But it was fun.
Have you had any senators along the way that are particular favorites?
Let me see, the committee has 20 senators. All of them were my favorites.
You are a political man, or a politically wise man. You know how to traverse these fields pretty well. Let me ask you about the building itself, both the office building and the Capitol. You've probably dealt in this role with a lot of changing technology over the years and changing gadgets. What's that been like? What are some of the changes you've seen?
I've seen many changes. There are, although I had the privilege of being the hearing coordinator for the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, but there are other changes that have happened that I've seen happen.
And, of course, even the best Senate staffers don't work 24/7. What do you do? What interests you when you're off hours?
I never had any off hours. So I work from the time I go there and the time I'm not there, the time I go back. There's always work to do dealing with the Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
Tell us more about your relationship with Strom Thurmond.
Strom Thurmond and I, we had a good relationship. He was from South Carolina, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people did not want him at the time when he became the senator from South Carolina, but he ran and won, and we became good friends.
Also, having been in the District of Columbia all this time, I mean, that city has changed a lot in terms of racial relations, the way people interact with one another. That must be a profound change looking back on it telescoped.
There have been a lot of changes. Looking back on it, they were beautiful changes. Dealing with the Committee on Foreign Relations, whoever the chairman may be or whatever, I had fun.
Do you make your home in the district or you are?
I'm in the District of Columbia.
My parents are both district natives. Were Eastern High, the pride of Capitol Hill, my dad, and my mother was in Northwest at Theodore Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went to Roosevelt.
How do you like that?
It was nice. I was trying to finish up for high school because I was in school and then all of a sudden I went back to get my high school diploma.
Yeah, that was, if one was the pride of Capitol Hill, Roosevelt's the pride of 13th Street, I guess you might say, right up the top there, just up the street from Central. It must be kind of astonishing to think about how, for the better, how much D.C. has changed.
D.C. have changed quite a bit, and I've been along with the changes, and I accept them as they come.
And I want to comment, because again, people can't see, but you, I said you're bright-eyed before, you also are looking me straight in the eye with a gaze, and having met the Clintons, the Thurmans, and all of these people parading through the Capitol all the years. I don't think anyone intimidated you, did they?
I never was intimidated by any of them. I was doing the work there, and I was cleaning the steps, step by step, what I enjoyed doing.
And so do you feel you might have left a little bit with them from you? Even Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, those are people you've held by the elbow too.
I think they learned from what I was doing, and I had no problem with any of them. They were a joy. And once you meet Bertie Bowman, you won't have to worry about anybody else.
Bertie Bowman is staff assistant and coordinator for hearings of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. We'll post this interview at federalnewsnetwork.com/Federal Drive. Hear the Federal Drive on your schedule. Subscribe at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your shows.
Hello, and welcome to the Lessons in Leadership podcast. I am your host, Shane Canfield, CEO of WEPA. Today, I'm thrilled to be joined by Vice Admiral Cutler Dawson. Cutler has had an incredible career serving our country for 35 years in the Navy, where he attained the rank of Vice Admiral. And during his service, he had numerous assignments afloat and ashore, including Commander, Second Fleet, Striking Fleet Atlantic, and in Washington at the Pentagon and on Capitol Hill, where he was the Navy's Chief of Legislative Affairs. Immediately following his retirement from active duty in 2004, he became the president and CEO of Navy Federal Credit Union, the world's largest credit union, where he served for 14 years. Under his leadership, Navy Federal grew from 2 million to 8 million members. Phenomenal. Cutler, welcome and thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Shane.
You've had a fascinating career across both military and the private sector. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background and your professional journey?
Well, I started out at the Naval Academy, where I graduated in 1970, and then, as you mentioned, spent 35 years in the Navy with six actual afloat commands. The first one was when I was 27 years old. I didn't know enough to be scared of anything, and it was probably one of the highlights of my career. And then after I retired after 35 years, I went to work at Navy Federal Credit Union as the CEO, where I spent my next 14 years. I'm currently retired and enjoying life, and it's been a great run for me.
How would you describe your leadership style, and how's that developed over the years?
My style has been quite consistent. I believe, and I've learned this in the Navy, that you have to go to the deck plates to see what is going on. And you have to learn what your people do and how they do it so you can help them to be better at it and more efficient and more productive. It's something that you need to do all the time. I remember I used to tell folks that you don't want to retreat to your cabin. And what I mean by that is the longer you're in a position, the less you think you have to get out and about. But that should be the opposite. You should get out and about more, because people change, situations change, and you've got to figure out a way to get to them and find out what they're doing and what you can do to help them.
We'll talk a little bit more about your book, but I read it, From Sea to the C-Suite. Fantastic read. You talk about the deck plates in that as well. I would encourage everyone to get a copy of this and read some more detail about going to the deck plates. Cutler, who was the most impactful leader in your life, and what quality did you admire about them?
I had numerous while I was in the Navy, but the quality that I enjoyed the most was the leaders that got to know me as an individual, and that they cared about me, and I could tell that they cared about me. And they were not only my leaders, but they were my mentors. And I remember one particular one, Bill Schiffer, when I had my first assignment at the Pentagon. I would go in to see him with my problem of the day, and I knew that he had numerous problems of his own, but he would stop and he would focus on me, and he would make me feel like I was the most important person in his world. And I tried to do that throughout my career. But really, it's about caring for your people.
Cutler, in reading your book, there was a quote you used that you used to inspire those people that work for you. And it really got my attention. And it was you are the captain of your own ship. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about what that means and how it was useful to you and the leaders you were developing.
Absolutely. What I mean by captain of your own ship, when you are the captain of a ship, sometimes you're in the middle of the ocean and you don't have anybody to turn to make decisions. You don't have anybody to turn to ask, what should I do now? You have to be the captain of that ship. And I translated that into, let's say, Navy Federal's organization, where I would tell branch managers that I said, you are the captain of the ships of Navy Federal. You're the ones that are facing the members or customers, as others call them, every day. And you have to make decisions without a lot of guidance in some cases and without a lot of time. So be the captain of your own ship. Step up, make decisions, do what you think is right, and you never can go wrong.
I think that is so important. And you have to give your people a little bit of latitude to take some risk as well, because there is risk for them in doing that and risk to your organization.
That's right. And I mentioned that I took command of my first ship with 5 years in the Navy, and I was 27 years old. Well, my boss had 32 years in the Navy, and his guidance to me when I first met him was, Cutler, you do the right thing and I'll back you up all the way. What a wonderful way to spend an assignment with backup and guidance like that.
What great advice. It's clear leadership is a topic you're passionate about. You wrote the book we mentioned before, From C to C-Suite. Can you tell us a little bit about that project?
Yes. When I was at Navy Federal, I would tell sea stories as parables to get my point across. And folks would tell me, Cutler, we like your stories. It gives us a picture of what you're trying to tell us. Now, what else are they going to say? They work for me, but I took it as a compliment, and it was. And my wife encouraged me to write a book, and I needed a co-author to help me, and I found a lady named Taylor Keelan, who was the perfect co-author. She turned in my stories into wonderful chapters that I'm very proud of.
Where can listeners find a copy?
Well, you can get it on Amazon, and you can also get it on the Naval Institute website. And I might add that any proceeds from the book, Navy Federal uses to give to charity.
Fantastic. Cutler, thank you very much. Really enjoyed your time and your lessons in leadership and sharing with us your life story. And I've learned a lot both from talking to you today and reading your book. And thank you very much for your time.
It's my pleasure. And I would like to add one thing if I could, Shane. During my assignments in Washington, D.C., I gained the utmost respect for the civilians that work here every day. They're hardworking, they're dedicated, and they have my eternal gratitude. I got to come and go from the Pentagon. They stayed every day and worked in Washington when I got to go out and enjoy being at sea.
Perfect. Thank you. Yeah, WAPO serves civilian federal employees, but your comment is well taken because the interaction between the two is continuous. It's nonstop and it's critical. So the career civil servants, as well as career military, our country would not be where it is today without them.
I totally agree. And I can tell you from the U.S. Navy standpoint, we couldn't operate like we do without them being the backbone of what we do.
Thank you very much for your time today, Cutler, and to everyone listening to Lessons in Leadership podcast. We'll see you next time.
Every year, one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services, so your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. It's like your own personal post office. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.